This is an ABC podcast.
I take responsibility for the vaccination program. I also take responsibility for the challenges we've had. Obviously, some things within our control, some things that are not. And I'm keen to ensure, as we have been over these many months, that we've been turning this around. I'm certainly sorry that we haven't been able to achieve the marks that we had hoped for at the beginning of this year.
As you may recall, the early stages of Australia's COVID vaccine program were beset by delays. But in the last few months, things have really turned around. On Saturday, the nation hit a major milestone. 80% of those aged 16 and over are now double jabbed.
Another magnificent milestone, Australia. How good is that?
It is an impressive achievement, but for those who were at the front of the queue the first time around, their immunity is starting to flag.
As we get closer to hitting those double dose rates, many of our frontline workers are reaching their own milestone, 6 months of being fully vaccinated. But concerns about waning protection have many asking when they can become triple dosed.
So will those people get their boosters in time? And is this the last booster we'll need or the beginning of a lifelong vaccine program? I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre.
And I'm Stephen Smiley. And today on The Signal, what we know and what we don't know about vaccines, boosters and waning immunity.
So the booster program is in Australia after Israel, one of the first in the world. And it's available to all Australians who have now passed 6 months since their second dose. But we're already at 173,000 people that have had their boosters, so we're off to a flying start.
So the Health Minister, Greg Hunt, has been pretty adamant that Australia's booster program, which is now open to anyone over 18 who has now had their second jab at least 6 months ago, is going to run smoothly, the implication being more smoothly than the initial rollout. And as you just heard, he says tens of thousands of one-jab booster shots have already been administered to priority groups such as healthcare workers. He also says there's definitely plenty of supply to go around this time. And in the event that you do struggle to get your hands on a booster, it will not invalidate your vaccination status.
And we wanted to run some of that by an impartial observer, as well as find out what comes after the booster. So we called Professor Tony Blakely. He's at the Melbourne School of Population and Global Health. And the first thing we asked him was whether, despite Greg Hunt's assurances, this rollout is likely to have the same issues as the last one.
No, the supply appears to be good now, which makes sense because companies have ramped up production. So you've got smaller companies like Moderna that were, you know, quite small at the beginning of this pandemic are now scaling up. So there shouldn't be too much problem. I'm more concerned that we make sure that lower middle income countries still keep getting their vaccines whilst we're getting our third or booster shot.
When it comes to delivery, I guess it occurs to me that the shape of the rollout in 2021, it was sort of slowly. And then there was this very compressed period where a lot of people had to go and get their jabs at once because we were in a rush all of a sudden because of Delta. Given that everything is just, you know, rolled 6 months down the road now, that's how boosters work. Are we going to see a similar sort of, I guess, compressed period in the booster delivery, and is that going to be a challenge?
Yeah, it's a good question. So if we just did an action replay on the way we've rolled it out, we'd have a big squashy fast period leading into Easter. I would imagine we'll look to spread that out a bit by perhaps bringing some of them 4 to 5 months and delaying some of the latter ones to 7 months. But it does actually raise a really interesting question or issue, which is that both New South Wales and Victoria, more so New South Wales, have done very well in the last couple of months. And that's probably because of that massive surge of vaccination, so that many, many people are within 2 to 3 months of their primary course, which comes back to the point we're talking about now. Those people close to their primary course have good protection against any infection as well as serious illness, but it will wane. So the period leading up to Easter next year, if we weren't having boosters, would probably not be great. But you're right that we want to spread out, if we can, spread out the administration of those boosters a little bit.
As far as we know, because 6 months is the period of time we've been told, but is there any harm in going earlier? Is there any danger associated with going 5 or even 4 months?
Probably not. All these recommendations, 6 months, 12 plus, you know, all the things that we do, they all come from the original trials. where, you know, they used 12 plus year olds or they used 100 micrograms, but we don't know what we don't know because they weren't done in the trials. So I don't think there'll be any great harm in bringing booster doses forward. The question will be, if you bring it forward in time to say 4 months, do you get the same amount of kick up? So we know that when you get your booster, you probably get to more immunity than you had after your first 2 doses. But the really critical question that's going to take some time to answer is, does that booster or third dose not have waning immunity? These are lots of questions we need to sort out. We'll probably stick pretty close to the 6 months, but I don't see that it should be gospel.
So 6-ish months is when most of us will get a booster jab. And because the world has had time to ramp up production, at least for wealthy countries, supply should be less of an issue this time. And Tony says there's another factor that might make this run a little easier too. And it's that while the initial rollout used a mixture of Pfizer, Moderna, and AstraZeneca vaccines in Australia, the third time around there's just one, Pfizer, which he says is not only what's available, but is also the most effective option.
AstraZeneca is, in the primary course, not as good at stopping any infections. So within a couple of months of your primary course, if you've had Pfizer, you're 80% less likely to get any infection. It's that any infection that then causes the transmission. AstraZeneca is, quote-unquote, only 60%. So having Pfizer is better for that. There's also good evidence, biological, but also now human studies, that giving people who've had AstraZeneca a Pfizer booster is really quite good. You get quite good kick-up in immunity. We don't quite know about the waning after that booster. So, you know, I had double AstraZeneca, and I'm definitely keen to get Pfizer as my booster.
Okay, let's have a look at what's been happening overseas, because, of course, you know, Australia was slower off the mark than some places in the world. Israel was kind of the very first, really, one of the very first to get a significant proportion of its population vaccinated, which means that they were one of the first places where that immunity started to wane.
Well, despite having one of the highest vaccination rates in the world, Israel is now weighing up further lockdowns as the number of COVID-19 infections soar.
Israel is giving some members of its population a third dose of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine, and it seems to be working.
What did we see in terms of a pattern in Israel?
It was quite profound, actually. They saw something like 6 months after their primary course that the immunity was down to 50% or less against any infection, and they had another wave of infection, which is what you'd expect because the immunity's waned. And because Israel and Pfizer are in a sort of close research collaboration, they quickly rolled out the boosters, and that caused the wave to go away. So it showed a number of things. It showed that, unfortunately, these vaccines are not perfect, they wane, but also showed that the booster is very effective.
When we say that it was only 50% effective at that point that it was measured in Israel, is that based on measuring antibodies? Is it based on a study of, you know, people who've been exposed to the virus? How do we get that number? How do we know?
It's based on people. So people, what we do is there's good administrative data records in Israel, and they can track you based on whether you've had your primary course, whether you've had a booster, and also whether you've been naturally infected. And what they can do is they can look at your chance of having an infection with a PCR positive test, your chance of being hospitalized, and your chance of death. And from all those things, you can work out that after 6 months, I think it was 43% was the number, but let's say 50% or less protection against any infection. The protection against hospitalization and death stayed high, but it still waned. It waned from something like 95% protection down to 90%. But when you flip it around the other way, that means 5% of people who have been vaccinated were now susceptible to dying, well, they had a 5% risk of the people who are unvaccinated that went to 10%. So you had a doubling of that mortality or hospital risk amongst the vaccinated compared to when they were first vaccinated. So yes, it's all very good epidemiological data. Here's another interesting thing though. They also actually looked at people who had been infected beforehand. And those people who were infected had, if Pfizer was 80% protection against any infection, they had 98.5%. And I think that's going to be something that we increasingly focus on, is the benefits of natural infection compared to vaccination is how we exit this pandemic.
And the risks of natural infection as well, right? Because there are things that we're still kind of learning about the virus and its long-term implications. I guess we have to weigh those.
Exactly. So we've got a really uncertain balance of risks and harms at the moment.
As you said before, you know, the booster plan here is 6 months, but potentially a bit earlier or a bit later. Have we seen in, you know, places like countries in Europe, for instance, the risk if you don't get the booster at the right time?
Not to that level of exactitude. What we do know is if you don't have the third dose or booster, whatever we're going to call it, is your immunity probably keeps waning. We don't know how low it goes because, you know, it would be unethical to follow a population and see if immunity went down to 0% or plateaued out at 40%. So we don't know whether it would completely go away against any infection, but it's certainly got to the point where both for the individual but also for society, the booster is warranted. So for the individual, it reduces their chance of going to hospital or dying from it, particularly for people over 60, say. But also from a societal level, the boosters mean that you don't need lockdowns. So think about next year in Australia. Imagine we don't do boosters. I'll pretty much guarantee you that we'll be back into a series of lockdowns around Australia about Easter next year because the vaccine would have waned that much. So we're using the boosters as well to make life better.
Okay, so we know boosters will help. And as Tony says, the fact that places like Israel have already done this means that we do have a fair idea of what effect it would have here.
Right, but he also adds we still don't have a super clear picture of what happens beyond a booster.
So, you know, we're getting boosted now. Everybody's thinking, well, does that mean I'm going to be boosted every 6 months for the rest of my life? That's one option. Another option is that the vaccine producers make even better vaccines that, I mean, when you get one dose, it lasts for 5 years or something like that. That'll be good. Another option is that the vaccine producers start producing upper airways vaccines like an aerosol or an inhaled one. They give you better immunity against picking up the infection and reduce that transmission in the population. So you end up getting both an aerosol or an inhaled vaccine as well as an injectable one. Another option, though, is that we just bite the bullet, either because we have to or we decide to, that vaccines aren't going to fully get us out of this pandemic. And what we're going to do is use vaccines to make it easier to keep the virus under control, but run along at a level which slowly sees much of the population get naturally infected and therefore boost immunity that way if natural infection gives you better immunity. These are decisions in Australia we don't need to make yet. I'm just thinking ahead through to next year. But I would anticipate that once we've all had our second booster shot or towards the end of that phase, these are the types of thinking we'll be starting to engage with as to, well, what's the next step after here?
Just clarifying, because you mentioned just now, and I didn't realise that there was so much uncertainty around this, that we don't actually have any idea about what comes after that first 6 month booster, whether we need, you know, another 6 months after that, or whether it's annual from there on out, or, you know, or whether or not that could just be the last one that we ever need. Is that possible?
Yes, it's quite extraordinary, isn't it? In a country so full of gambling, I'm surprised we haven't seen stakes on this. But anyway, we don't know, is the honest answer. So the scenarios are that we just keep boosting ourselves every 12 months, say. Let's assume that the six-month booster halves the waning, so you can wait 12 months. And it becomes like influenza. The next option is that the virus is kind to us and mutates to something more infectious but far less virulent, i.e. it's less likely to kill you. I hope that's what happens, but we certainly can't guarantee that, and some of my colleagues suggest that is unlikely. And then the other option, which is the messy option, but is possibly what will happen, is that we use the vaccines to make our society pretty resilient and able to function with us at back cafes, back at school, back at work, with a simmering amount of infection. And that natural infection gives the immunity to those people who won't be vaccinated, so catches them up, but also on top of the vaccination amongst the vaccinated people boosts their immunity, and maybe that's going to be a pathway out of here. We do not know which of those options we'll take yet. Australia's in a lucky position here because we can watch and learn from Israel, Europe, US, other places, and start making our decisions about that early next year.
You did mention earlier, Tony, that sort of equity question about, you know, lots of poor countries that are not administering their first, let alone second, let alone booster jabs. And, you know, I do remember, you know, that the metaphor is that it's like gold plating your lifeboat to do a booster. That was what people were saying a couple of months ago. But it does sound like that the science around that has shifted now, and the booster is actually essential. Is that right?
Yes, I think so. From a high-income country perspective, I think it's essential to keep our society going. If you're in Pakistan at the moment, you probably won't be thinking too much about boosters because by some estimates, nearly 80% of the Pakistan population has already been infected. So it depends on where you sit in the world. I do note that Mike Ryan, senior advisor to the World Health Organization, continues to lambast any country that's using boosters. I don't think he's altered his position on that.
The reality is right now, today, if we think about this in terms of an analogy, we're planning to hand out extra life jackets to people who already have life jackets while we're leaving other people to drown without a single life jacket. That's the reality.
And he's got a fair point. But then I've been thinking about this a lot. I'm not sure which one of the reasons that you don't want much virus circulating is it reduces the chance of a really, really nasty variant arising. Now, a nasty variant arising is one that would be resistant to all vaccines. That's more likely to arise in a population which has got vaccine floating around, but some partial immunity, i.e. waning immunity. So it may be better for the world in the long run if the countries that have already got high vaccination rates get the boosters in there to keep the virus circulation rate down so there's not that selection pressure to produce a super ugly variant that's resistant to vaccines. But that might be me just self-justifying us using boosters.
Either way, it's an argument I haven't heard before, so it's an interesting one.
Yeah, well, as with anything with COVID, there's so much interesting stuff to think about.
And still a lot of unknown by the sounds of it.
Oh, a huge amount of unknowns. For example, a couple of minutes ago, you were asking about long COVID. We still don't have a good handle on that, particularly amongst children, which are our remaining unvaccinated segment of our population. We think it's probably not as bad as what people were initially suggesting, but we won't know how bad long COVID is until we've had a long enough time period to measure long COVID. So there's a lot of uncertainty with this.
That is The Signal for today. If you'd like to get in touch with me or Ange, our email is thesignal@abc.net.au.
And we'll be back with you tomorrow. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.